Hold on to your butts, it's time for a new episode of Destroy All Culture, a sonic death ray from Dimension X that sounds exactly like a weekly podcast hosted by Adam P. Nave and Aiden Morgan. Exposure to Destroy All Culture is 100% fatal, so we put it on the internet. Now listen and die! Lethal effects may take up to 75 years. And as we slide into winter, at least when we're recording this, it's episode 162 of Destroy All Culture. I'm Adam P. Nave, and with me as always is Aiden Morgan.
This is still the way.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, I admit, like, given our great ability to get these up on time, I'm like, well, it's winter now. God only knows what season it'll be when we actually get this up.
There'll probably still be snow on the ground in northern climates.
Sure. maybe.
Maybe.
Actually, before you said there was a bit of weird TV news. I haven't gotten to watch this yet, but I just wanted to let you know. Laura let me know last night. I mentioned that, like, the new season of The Toys That Made Us dropped.
Right.
The creators have a new show as well that also just dropped on Netflix called The Movies That Made Us.
Huh.
Where they're, like, they're doing the same kind of thing, same sort of humor, same everything,
but
about 45 minutes
movies.
Apiece.
Oh, nice.
The first four are Dirty Dancing, Home Alone, Die Hard, and Ghostbusters.
Wow. Oh, this sounds like fun.
Yeah, they did an interview I saw where, like, they were just talking about how it's easier because, like, with the toys, you know, you want to find something that's, like, big and marquee and that lasted long enough and all this.
Right.
Movies have such a wider release that it's way easier to just pick something like, oh, yeah, people know that. Yeah. So hopefully this sticks around, just because I like their style. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I like the cut of their jib.
They got some good jibs.
Anyway, I just wanted to get that out of the way real quick. So
very nice.
There was an episode of Mandalorian this week.
Yeah.
And,
from the
way I understand it, you did not enjoy it.
I'm wanting to enjoy The Mandalorian, and I was like, okay, cause I was watching it, and he shows up in the backwater place, and then there's the scene where there's clearly the woman is there, and it's like, oh, this is the promise of a life. Then he does that, and there's that shot where he spins around with his hand on his gun when the kid comes in the room, and I'm like, oh, it's Shane. They're doing Shane.
Right.
This is what he's Alan Ladd in a helmet. That's
fine.
But it just made me think, oh, Shane was a great film. I mean, it was moving. There were stakes. It was like The Mandalorian is just none of those things. And I just thought, man, the show could be so much more interesting. It just, there could be more depth, but they just kind of, there's still that same sort of plotting. One thing happens, then the next thing. And
right.
Frankly, the agrarian community of, like, krill farmers, you know, and the big bad raiders, it also just, I thought, this is like a Star Trek episode. You know,
yeah,
just kind of like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I told you, like, I watched it in, like, 17 odd minutes into the episode, I realized I kind of grayed out. Like, I'd been watching it, but I wasn't taking it in.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, like, I do wonder, like, how much the show works or not based on your experience with Westerns. And if you like Westerns, I like Westerns, but I also, I don't know, I don't watch them often.
Yeah, no, I'm not a Western aficionado, and you know, but I mean, I enjoy some of them. So,
right.
I mean, I like the classics. So, and you know, and I like many things, and of course, I mean, Baby Yoda is calculated to be lovable, but
sure, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, but. Damn, if that one moment when they turn around and he's, like, standing there sipping broth from a bowl, I'm like, holy shit, that's funny. So,
right.
Okay, I get all that, but I just don't feel there's a lot of there in this show. So, yeah.
It did get an unintentional laugh out of me, which wasn't their fault. They were homaging a very classic scene in many, many movies. I just twigged to exactly the wrong film.
Oh, no, what?
When they do their, like, bog standard fucking training montage.
Right.
And they pull out the spears. I flashed to Army of Darkness. And again, like, there's hundreds of movies that use this exact same scene, right? Like, it's not like they were doing it from Army of Darkness. But for whatever reason, I just flashed to Army of Darkness. And I was like,
I want Bruce Campbell to be under that helmet now. That this would be such a more interesting show.
Oh my God. That would be... That would be... I'm just picturing Bruce Campbell doing The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
This is the way, baby. And actually, I'm thinking right. Ash doing The Mandalorian.
Yes! Exactly!
God. Oh yeah, it's been real, baby, but I gotta get out of here now.
But also, I wonder, like, because I wasn't a huge fan of the Ash vs. the Evil Dead TV show.
It was okay. It
was alright.
Yeah.
But I realized that had they done it more as a straight Western, like, and that was the thing with kind of Evil Dead, of course, and Army of Darkness lost a lot of it, was if you do it straight, except for Bruce Campbell.
Right.
Like, he's the one thing off in the universe, it works even better for me.
Precisely.
And if they had done, like, a straight Western kind of serialized show, but with Ash just kind of traveling and, you know, doing all the same beats as Mandalorian, right?
Right.
Like, a Lone Wolf and Cove riff, a Shane riff, you know, whatever it is. But with Ash, it all of a sudden becomes this amazing TV show to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I'm sad for the show we didn't even get.
I love the bit in this episode when sort of he has to make a choice whether to stay or to go, and he's thinking of leaving Baby Yoda with them, and I just thought my mind flashed like projecting like 10 or 20 years into the future when everybody there is grown up and this fucking Baby Yoda is still a baby and they're all just kind of sick of him now. They're like, oh, God damn it. More of your cute antics. Just drown this motherfucker already. although I did like the AT-ST. That's a detail I liked. It was sort of like,
yeah,
like in the ruins of the Empire, there's all this like junk floating around, and
right.
People, yeah. So I like that, and I kind of like the way they. I mean, that's the thing. Like when it's in Return of the Jedi, you get the Ewoks making fairly short work of them. But in this episode, like you sort of understand just how sort of scary this can be because they're just like
or
we are.
How lame fucking humans are because Ewoks made short work of it.
that's also true. Yeah, but Ewoks.
I mean, a bunch
just,
of fucking koalas in the jungle were like, "What the fuck ever?" And these humans are like, "What will we do? We're all gonna die!" I'm like, "Come on, guys."
But you realize that one of those humans was Pillboy.
Yes.
So.
And when I recognized him, I was. I mean, I've seen him in other stuff. You know, he's been in a lot of shit. He was in that very short-lived Paul Feig space show on USA.
Oh my God! Yeah. What was the name of that show? I can never remember.
Oh God, I don't fucking remember.
Was it Other Space? Was that
Other Space? Show? Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. A very funny show.
Other Space.
But, we should have been around more.
But like, first I flashed like, oh, he's in Other Space, just because it was like a science fiction connection, right?
Right.
And I was like, wait, no, he's also fucking Pillboy. Like, and I kept waiting the entire episode for him to invent the Molotov cocktail.
Right, or that would have been so good. Or
and
like
just throw
bring
it.
In,
just...
Or to bring in Donkey Doug or something.
Right, and just like yell, portals! Like, it just, again, it's something that the Mandalorian could never do. But,
yeah. So, and now I think we're four episodes in. We are halfway through. And I'm like...
Yeah, we've done nothing.
And I thought I was pretty sure that they were bringing in Gina Carano as a regular. It was like, oh, okay, he's going to get a gang together. He's going to get like a crew.
She'll come
of his
back
own.
To have that happen in like season
that would
two.
Be, yeah, probably. Oh, God, season two. What's some more of the same?
I assume that there's going to be a season two. They're not going to sink this much money into it. Not.
No. And I was like, you guys spent $50 million on a half hour of this? Like, really? Give me a fucking break.
And again, it was a beautiful show. It was really mm-hmm. well directed. Everything about it is great, except for the show itself.
Bryce Dallas Howard. She's the director.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So good on you, Bryce Dallas Howard.
Yeah. In other streaming TV show news that is also slightly a disappointment for the most part, Titans ended its second season.
Boy, did it.
And is going to have a third. We already know.
Yes.
But yeah. Like, that was, again, it was the best and worst of the show at once.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what I mean? Like,
I did a double dose. I just watched episodes 12 and 13.
Okay.
So I got like a good shot of Titans.
Yeah, I mean, like, this last episode specifically, like, there were moments where it was like, this is the show I want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe it's a little darker, a little grimmer than I would like for certain aspects of it, but it's still kind of fun, right?
Yeah.
You know, from the, like, what do we do? Connor, that's it. That was your move. Like, that whole, like, just weird runner of, like, just what the fuck?
Yeah, so they take care of, like, Deathstroke really right. quickly. And then it's like, okay, he's the biggest threat the Titans have ever faced, but, you know, he's done. And then Rachel sort of reminding Gar of who he is through her powers. I liked that, because you can see that Rachel can do things that aren't just,
yeah.
you know, death and destruction.
And again, I liked the Nightwing reveal, and that fight was yep. really well done.
A lot of flipping in the Deathstroke
fight. It's a Dick Grayson fight, you know?
Yeah. A lot of just like, hey, there's some acrobat moves, pretty good.
Right.
I thought that was all good. I knew that Jericho would, we get Jericho back and probably in Rose's body, and I was correct in that. And then Donna dies for some reason.
Yeah, that made no sense to me.
Yeah, just I guess she's, and I was like, because it's funny, because I was like, she's. You know, she saves Dawn somehow, who cannot move sideways. That's
right.
always a problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, she slumps over the pole. And I was like, whoa, that's going to take a while to recover from. And then I decided to check my email. Like, so I just looked over to the left, another screen. I went back, and there was a funeral. I'm like, what?
Yeah, it didn't make any sense that she just
really?
Died from that. But
yeah,
it was just like, oh, contract's up.
Yeah, that's all I could figure.
Yeah, or they were just like, yeah, our cast is too big.
Yeah, and they're like, who do we keep? I know, let's keep Hank. Let's do that.
Not the best move.
Let's give him a whole cage fighting thing and then a redemption arc. Like, and let's
kill off the
girl.
It wasn't even an arc.
No.
It was like an episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, I you know, and the dinner bit was nice, and
mm-hmm.
I do like how quickly they were like, oh yeah, we have to explain that thing in the diner with the Bruce Wayne hallucination thing. I just like kind of do it as like whispered quick dialogue was a weird choice.
Yeah. I imagine they're going to follow up on it somehow in season 3.
I mean this was very clearly they did this for the we don't know if we're going to get season 2. Season 3.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's, like I said, like it, that's the thing. It's like, it was, at times, like, the show I wanted, and at times it was all those worst parts of the show that I just hate. And, I don't know, I mean, it was better than season 1?
Yeah, it was, actually. It was better than season 1. It was a step up in terms of, like, storytelling and just look and pacing. And had some the highs of season 2 were higher than the highs of season 1.
Right. So hopefully season 3 gets even better.
Yeah, I'll have like one really great episode or something. I don't
yeah.
know. Maybe two. Maybe two good episodes.
Right.
And
we keep going by like season 15 or so, we'll have a great season. Oh, we're just being mean today.
Yeah. But hey. So I understand you're going to be seeing Knives Out.
I am. I was. I asked some friends, you know, like, when are we going to go see this? Because it's this thing where it's like I have some friends that I usually go to see movies with, but, you know, obviously they have their own lives as well, and they'll go see movies without me, and I go see movies without them. But occasionally, like, we'll wait to see movies.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're not very clear with the, like, we're all going to go see this together, right? Sometimes it falls apart, which is actually kind of funnily why I didn't end up seeing Terminator in theaters.
Oh.
Because they had to go to a convention, and I was like, oh, well, I'll wait for them. And hadn't thought about getting tickets.
Right.
And then they just surprised decided to just go see it, which is utterly, I mean, that, you know, fuck, there's no law about this. Like, go see the fucking movie. But, like, it was, like, 2 days later where I was like, oh, yeah, when do you want to go see this? They're like, we did. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess I should go do that. And then I just got busy and never did, you know, because for some reason, like, my momentum, at least, to go see movies is always weaker if it's just me.
Yeah, I get you.
Unless it's something I'm really excited about. Like, I'll go see anything. But you like it, if someone else is like, let's go see this, I'll be like, yes, totally. But if it's just me, I'm like, I mean, I want to go see it, but I mean, there's time and blah. So anyway,
yeah.
So I want to make sure, like, we saw Knives Out, and I didn't want to, like, wait on it. And so I was like, when do we want to go see it? And we're trying to figure out a time. And first it looked like we were going to go see it yesterday. And I was like, yay, go see it before the podcast. And then everyone's schedule was like, yeah, no, Sunday night. And I'm like, man,
oh,
well. Okay.
Well, we can be talking about it next week.
Yeah.
I will say I
but
saw
you
it.
Can, you can hit me with some of it quickly.
Yeah. Well, I saw it first on Wednesday evening. Here's the thing: the one really good thing in Canada about U.S. Thanksgiving is that the movies, which you know always drop like late Thursday night, they drop on Wednesday. So, which is aces as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
So we get like a day, we got an extra day of movies, and I was like, fuck it.
And I assume, just because you don't do Thanksgiving, like, we get a lot of huge releases here, but no one, well, I say no one, but, like, you tend not to try to go on Thanksgiving because it's too crowded?
Ah, yes, of course.
And I'm assuming that doesn't happen up there.
No, it's just a regular old
week.
I don't know why you guys have it at this time, because it's close to Christmas. Like, we have our Thanksgiving like mid-October, and it's a nice sort of, it lands just at the right moment.
Right, yeah, I don't know why Thanksgiving is so close to Christmas here. I'm sure there's some bullshit historical reason for it.
I'm sure there is.
But, yeah, it's kind of obnoxious.
it's like, man, we genocided those indigenous people good on November.
Right?
Yeah, or something. I don't know.
Like, we're predicting the Guns N' Roses will write a song.
I like that.
But, yeah, I mean, I guess it's supposed to be like, you know, a harvest festival. I'm like, yeah, but there's no harvest in November.
Yeah, it's really weird. It's the middle of winter. Come on, people. Yeah, I don't...
Well, I mean, here it's not usually the middle of winter, you know, so...
Because,
yeah, our winter doesn't last, like, 17 months out of the year, unlike you.
This is true. Actually, our winter lasts approximately 27 months out of the year.
Oh, sorry.
So, yeah.
Anyway.
Just when we think winter's over, it's, like, 2 years from now, and, you know, it's still winter. But, yeah, so I saw it on Wednesday
evening.
Game of Thrones
out there.
Exactly. And summer is never coming. But no, I saw it then. And I went and saw it on Friday night again. Because I'm like, because this is a movie that you want to see at least twice.
Gotcha.
Because it is packed dense. Because it's a whodunit, right? So
right.
Johnson like litters everything with, he litters clues throughout. And it's one of those things where you're like, if you can see it, If you know where to look, you can probably figure it out. Or at least you'll have a better shot of figuring it out. But it's convoluted enough that you're probably not going to.
Gotcha.
And it is, yeah. And it is such a delight. I mean, it's been a long time since I've gone to see a movie that is just so, so entertaining. Where, like, the audience is, like, laughing and like, cheering along. That's
sweet.
That's what we got.
Well, hopefully that'll happen, you know, tonight.
Yeah, hopefully you don't go with a bunch of jaded hipsters who are like,
yeah,
whatever.
Portland, that would never happen. yeah.
But yes,
yeah.
I wish you, I envy you getting to see Knives Out. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think what else happened. Good lord,
did you see any flash things?
I here's the terrible thing is I don't really remember the last episode distinctly. Actually, no, that's true, I do. And it's a two-parter, which is weird to do. So like your two-parter ends like this week going into Crisis, right? Like that's just a weird choice.
Yeah.
And it was a fine episode, I guess. Like, I don't know.
Fair enough.
I don't know.
It got good reviews. This
yeah,
episode.
Something about it just felt a little off. Like it was just the return of whiny Barry Allen.
Okay.
Which I'm just kind of sick of at this point.
I completely understand.
You know, Arrow was good.
Oh, it was good, wasn't it?
Yeah,
actually,
they finally did their Groundhog Day episode.
Yes, actually, that was I have to say this. Yeah, let's talk about this for a minute, because I would say that this episode was probably one of my favorite ever episodes of Arrow.
This season has just been like consistently knocking it out of the park.
Yeah, like the first couple of episodes were like, oh, this is good. You know, that's good. This is some good Arrow, and then they just kind of began to like. I mean, episode 4 was really good, and like these last couple have just consistently been excellent, excellent hours of television.
Someone mentioned, I don't know if it was in a review or where I saw it, but someone mentioned that, like, this is episode 6, and the first 6 episodes are 7? 6.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever the fuck it is. Every episode has had a reference to that season number.
Oh. Like,
and like this episode was the season where what's his fuck dies.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Every episode apparently just has a weird like something baked into it.
Right. Well, yeah. Well, I mean, sometimes it's pretty obvious. Like, you know, in the episode 5, he goes to Russia, for example.
Right.
So, and you know, there's the other episode which has Rilla Fukushima returning, and so on.
Exactly.
And so forth.
Like, that's the thing, is everyone has at least one structural call out to the season it references.
Hmm.
Which is an interesting, subtle way to do it.
Yeah. I that made sense to me, but I guess I didn't really pay attention as much.
Well, okay, right. I mean, well, this is going to be episode 7 this week, and it'll be the last time they can do it. Episode 8, of course, is Crisis, which makes reference to this season, essentially.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, episode 9 is their backdoor pilot, and episode 10 is their end. So, I mean, sure.
Hmm. Okay, yeah. Yeah, they went to Nanda Parbat at one point. So they're returning, but yeah, I didn't think about the death of Quentin as in the way it was being referenced. That's pretty brilliant.
Yeah, it was also the year he spent in prison, and like Quentin makes a joke about it early on.
Right, right. And I have to say, as soon as I realized they were doing a time loop episode,
yeah.
I was very pleased. I'm such a sucker for the time loop and
when they're done well, like,
yeah, I mean, even if they're done badly, I still
okay,
like
that's
them.
Fair. Like, I kind of do love them.
You know what I mean? But yeah, no, they're done well. It's
just like, you know,
better.
The Supernatural one stands out.
Right.
The Legends one was great.
Oh yeah, I think, and of course, there's. I mean, I think maybe the gold standard for televised versions of this might be the Next Generation episode.
Yeah.
Where they're caught, and I think it's Data who starts realizing what's going on. But yeah, this is...
I don't know. Like I said, I think for me, the gold standard, though, really did shift to that Supernatural one. It's the funniest of them all.
Well, yes.
But I've been rewatching Lost Girl. I just watched their take on it.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm. Which is also their Christmas episode, so hey.
Oh, hey.
What was the other one I was just thinking about that was like, that was a weird one. God. Oh, the Farscape one, which is the one that kind of breaks the mold on how you do it. Because he was repeating the future. It's in season 1.
Right, yes.
When season 1 was full of, let's take these tropes and like turn them around.
Right.
To do something new, and then that's how they did it, right? He was constantly reliving the future.
Oh my god, yeah, I've totally forgot about that.
Which is, again, like, they're the only people I've seen really pull that off.
Yeah. Freaking Farscape. You know, I firmly believe it's just because the people working on the show had never really done this.
Right.
Like, it was their first time working in the genre, and like they're just like, hey, let's try this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Huh.
But yeah, so it's a tried and true format thing. Everyone loves it.
Yes, it's a crowd pleaser.
But let's both be honest, because I think we mailed each other like fairly quickly when we were both watching the episode, going, it's not something you ever thought fucking Arrow would do.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, up until like the last, like, it's not the show that, I mean, again, like, it used to be the show that wouldn't have, you know, superpowered things. And then it wasn't the show that would have magic until it did.
Right.
And, you know, it's not the show that'll have time travel until it does.
Exactly. Which is kind of delightful. Yeah, yeah. I think it was the moment I was watching it, and sort of, you know, he, in the previous episode, he gets, you know, he and everybody, the others get tranked, and then he wakes up, and it's like, okay, he's in some sort of alternate reality, or lots of time has passed, or something. And then he walks into the party, and the woman laughs, and I'm like, oh, okay, that we're going to hear, it's a time loop episode, because this is going to play out again and again and again. And I'm like, and then the guy makes the joke, and I'm like, yep. We're in time loop. We're in Groundhog's Day territory.
Yeah, I didn't tweet to it for a while. I mean, until the first loop, frankly.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I figured we were like in a dreamscape type of thing. I just didn't figure the time loop part of it.
Yeah, it was just the laugh. It just seemed like so... It seemed like one of those auditory cues that was like was
Yeah, no, it is. That is a really big classic move, right?
Yeah. And
do you
so
have
I was
a party?
Like, oh. Yes.
Because this way you get to just redo the party slightly differently?
Yes.
Yeah,
exactly. You know, you don't have to redress the set or anything.
Right, and it gives you a lot of moving parts. You can try changing one thing or another, and also show the getting sick of the same things over and over again. Yeah, the party scene's a really good way to do it.
Precisely. And the other thing I really liked, I mean, this is one of these things it reminded me of maybe the Three Stigmata of Palmer Eldritch.
Okay.
In which the main character, not Joe Chip, that's Ubik. Can't remember the name of the character in Three Stigmata. He's always trying to find. He's trying to like find a solution for his life, but he can't. So he just does it over and over again. And I thought this was rather similar.
Nice.
Yeah, because they get a little farther each time before Quentin gets shot, basically. And they're like, right. Oh, okay, then we know that gets him shot, so let's skip over that bit and go to the next thing. And they get shot. And I thought it was quite poignant when in the end. And a great bit of acting from Paul Blackthorne and Stephen Amell.
Right, and I did think that, like, again, as a lesson, like, you know, it's like you have to learn this lesson to get it, like, it's not the lesson you would ever expect this show to be like, you need to figure this shit out.
yeah.
Like, you need to stop.
Yeah. But it also makes perfect sense that, I think in the context of Arrow and Oliver Queen's character, that he wouldn't just accept, you know, the monitor at his word after a while, and he would actually try to, like, work against it or like,
right.
Go off on his own, you know, decide that he knows better. And this was like ultimately him saying, "This is really the last lesson you have to learn."
Yeah,
you know, this is a thing that you've never quite figured out, and now you need to.
But I'm also gonna call it that. Like, it's also not gonna stick.
Probably not.
Like, it can't, right? Like, you can't just break a character that way and just be like, "Well, now he just doesn't try anymore."
Yeah. No. Exactly. Yeah, you need to do something. Otherwise,
you set up a good scene for him to, like, kind of believe it for a while, and then somewhere in crisis, he's like, wait, no, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that's been a great season of Arrow.
I does agree.
Anyway.
What else was there? Right. I wanted to mention there's somebody I follow on Twitter.
Yes.
Who usually has, you know, interesting things to say. They're a writer, cultural critic. I think they're quite young and you know they're highly woke. Of a very specific, like, brand of extremely online wokeness, which is relevant to this.
Okay.
And tweeted out two things in rapid succession, which just kind of, like, completely bent my mind. First off, she said, "I'm getting really disillusioned with The Good Place because clearly Chidi is autistic and everybody is laughing at him and it's gross."
Huh.
And okay. I was like, well, he isn't. I mean, he's not canonically autistic, and I don't think the writers are just taking, neurodiverse traits and mapping them onto a character and going, ha ha ha.
I can kind of see the read that would get you there.
I can too. I like that's the thing. It's not completely out of someone's ass. I kind of get it.
But I also just don't feel that we're laughing at him.
No, I mean, A, we're not laughing at him, and B, it's like his hyper fixation and his like. His problems with emotional affect aren't, to me, they're not presented as being like neurodiverse. They're him taking the wrong lesson from his attempts, you know, from his childhood, and applying it to life.
Sure, but
people, or like making fun of neurodiverse traits? I don't know.
Right, and again, like I think most of the laughter in The Good Place in general, when we're laughing at, like, you know. At like Tahani's behavior or Chidi's behavior, say, mm-hmm. or even Jason's, isn't a we're laughing at him like a Friends episode, you know, like look at this idiot. Right. It's more sympathetic laughter of, and that's what The Good Place does. Like here are these archetypes that like we all see bits of in ourselves.
Yeah,
and it's that, yeah. that commiseration laughter.
Yes. Okay. Just yeah, it's one of those things where I'm like, my initial reaction is what? This is bullshit. And I'm like, well, it's not entirely bullshit. Like there is something in there, but I just don't think it is what they're saying it is. Essentially,
I can see half of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I will always like I could see the you could read him on the spectrum. Totally valid read to me.
Yeah,
like I don't personally see it, but that's me, and I'm not, you know, I'm not an expert in the field or someone who is on the spectrum, so I don't know. And that's what I'm saying. It's a perfectly valid read. I will just argue to my last breath of the laughing at him, like kind of meanly. That's not what the show is or does.
Precisely. Yeah, exactly.
Like that's just a weird read on the show in general. Like if you're watching the show and thinking like, oh, we're laughing at Jason because he's an idiot. It's like, no. I mean. On the one hand, sure, like we're laughing at what he does because it's stupid.
But yes,
it is that commiseration laugh. And I think it's all of the characters get that.
Precisely.
Like Janet, even. And, you know, like, because, like, we're all kind of, not to Breakfast Club ending the show, but, like, we're all kind of the dirtbag. We're all kind of the overthinker. We're all the idiot. Like, we're all sometimes about status. Like, it's all of the characters, like, and again, Michael and Janet included, are bits of the human condition, right? Like, that's the show.
Precisely. Yeah.
And that's the point.
I would argue, actually, if anybody on the show is neurodiverse, it's Janet. She's the one on the spectrum, not Chidi.
But yeah, I just don't get it.
Yeah, I thought I mentioned it, because this is a take that it had never occurred to me. Yeah. And as soon as I read it, I'm like, okay.
So you said there were two, though.
There were two. And the second one really did break my mind.
Okay.
And it was, and this is, it's one of these complicated chains of, like, retweets and quote tweets. Goddamn Twitter discourse. It's bizarre. So somebody had posted a little picture of Baby Yoda holding the bowl of broth.
Uh-huh.
And the caption somebody written was, me after watching me watching White Fanboy still angry at The Last Jedi.
Yes,
after 2 years.
I saw that. Well, right. Okay, I saw a different one, but yeah.
Yeah, and then somebody had quote tweeted that, and this person who'd written about The Good Place had retweeted it, so it was in my timeline. It said, not just White Fanboys. Let's talk about how racist The Last Jedi was. And then my brain just stopped. I'm like, fucking how? Like, if you want racism in Star Wars, like, go to the Phantom Menace. Or with, sure. like, with the Jew slaver going, I mean, that's just straight up, that's taking non-human characters and mapping racial stereotypes on them and presenting them uncritically. That, to me, is racist. Taking human characters with different skin colors in The Last Jedi, it doesn't quite map anyway because we're not, the world of Star Wars is not our world, right? So it doesn't quite work. But also, I don't understand where the racism is. I just
well, that's exactly. I want to explain it for like where the racism is, other than
I
don't
wanted
know.
To
like,
ask.
It's just minimizing Finn. I
really don't know. I mean, if Finn isn't the hero, but I mean, Poe ends up being like the leader of the rebellion. He's a person of color. I mean, Oscar Isaac. So
right.
And Rose Tico is like a main character who has an entire arc and
yeah,
like
talk
saves
about
a bunch
the racism
of animals
in the fandom around Last Jedi. Valid.
Extremely valid. But I thought I'd bring it up because I was like, because I can't figure it out. I didn't want to ask because it's really hard to. I mean, even if you say serious question, you don't sound serious. You sound any attempt to suss that out on Twitter by interacting with people sounds like bad faith. So I was like,
yeah.
I'm not even going to bother. But I don't get it.
Yeah, no, I don't.
I wish I knew. I wish somebody could tell me. And I kind of want to, and I don't want to Google it because it's just going to be such a fucking quagmire.
It has to be about the fandom. It has to be just badly worded.
I hope so.
Because
I really hope so.
It has to be.
Yeah.
I will accept nothing else.
Yeah. Oh, and it's also got Benicio del Toro. It's got a really healthy complement of people of color, which I mean, in the cast,
who are all
which
important
I
to the cast. Like they're not just like you know tokens sitting out there. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
But like,
I think
the only
this
thing.
Is, I think this is probably is. Sorry. Go ahead.
I was gonna say the closest I could get is that a lot of the media for Force Awakens posited Finn as like the hero of the story.
Ah. Right.
And then it kind of shifted. That's all I really got. And I don't know, maybe they were, but I've never heard that before.
Yeah, I'm just I was thinking they don't like, for example, maybe somebody was upset that Rose and Finn are sort of hived off into a different plot for a large part of the movie, or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't
know.
To me,
I'm willing
cool,
to believe
like
that it's there. I'm also willing to admit that like I don't see it, and if
right.
it is there, that's great. Someone explain it to us.
Precisely.
Because
we're
idiots.
And I think it might come from the same. It might come from a same branch of the fandom that derides Rey as like a Mary Sue, for whatever reason.
Right.
So perhaps they're saying, why are we paying attention to this white Mary Sue, and sending like. You know, Finn and Rose off onto a different storyline and giving and like giving Poe this like humiliating demotion. You know, is he a hot-headed Latino? Is that what's like? These are the things that I was trying to puzzle through, and I couldn't quite get there.
Yeah, that's a new one on me.
But here's one thing I would like. I was going to mention earlier. I would like to hear. Vis-a-vis Chidi and autism, I would be interested in hearing from somebody on the spectrum what their take is on it, because that I think would be a valid and interesting perspective.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know if this person is on the spectrum. She never mentions it, so I don't know. But I'm like, this is something at least worth thinking about.
Oh yeah, no, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, weird.
Anyway, yeah. So I'm still gonna love The Good Place. So
for the little bit we get left.
Yes, exactly.
But in a couple weeks we get more Expanse, and they're not the same show, oddly enough.
no, that's. But we do get more Expanse, so that is nice.
Yeah.
There's a couple. Oh, I have something. I've been watching.
Yeah.
And I have a slightly amusing story around watching it. BBC has come out with a War of the Worlds miniseries.
Right.
And I'm kind of a sucker for the War of the Worlds.
Okay.
I love the original novel. I even like the Tom Cruise movie, believe it or not. Tripods with the invisible heat rays and, you know, sucking blood from corpses. Yeah,
sure.
I'm into it. So I thought, oh man, BBC's do. I saw a little clip from it, and I'm like, oh, this looks pretty good. And I thought, how closely I wonder will they follow the original, you know, the original novel? Because one thing you notice about War of the Worlds adaptations is they really don't follow the original very closely. They take the core idea and some plot points, and then they just run with it.
You kind of have to at this point.
Precisely. I mean, you, even if you're going to set it in, you know, the same exact same time frame and everything, you'd have to do something different. Because, I mean, War of the Worlds isn't really... It's not... I mean, despite the fact that it gets adopted into multiple media, it's not exactly very cinematic in some ways. Like, the plot isn't like a page-turner. You know, that's my feeling on it. So I went looking for it, and I discovered something. There is a BBC miniseries called The War of the Worlds.
Okay.
And there's a French-English co-production on Canal Plus called War of the Worlds. And they are radically different things. But they're both adapted from H.G. Wells, but they both come out at the same time. So I was very confused when, because my understanding from the clip I had seen of The War of the Worlds was that it's set in Edwardian England, right? In the same, roughly the same time frame and the same place as the Wells. And then I was watching War of the Worlds, and it starts with somebody getting a tattoo. And I'm like, close-ups. And I'm like, I didn't think they got tattoos. Like, you know, this is popular in Edwardian England. And then suddenly there's a woman on the phone speaking unsubtitled French. And I'm like, I didn't think they had phones. And why is it French? And what is going on? Well, I'm just going to stick with it because it'll get to Edwardian England sooner or later. And then about 20 minutes in, I'm like, no, it is not. It is not going to get there.
That's amazing.
But it's actually a really fun series all on its own. It's got Gabriel Byrne and a few other notable actors. And some of the scenes are just straight up French, but it's not hard to follow along. You know, I could pick out a few words. I'm Canadian, so we had to learn French in school, so wasn't totally lost.
Sure.
You know, and so on. But then I said, okay.
I just love that you got taken by, like, it's like that grandmother scam they do in, like, you know.
Yeah.
With those DVD companies.
Exactly. That's exactly what kind of what it was completely unintentional. I was like, well, this is oddly different.
Yeah, my little Bobby, he talked about liking that movie with the big robot. What was that called? Oh, look, here's a movie. It's Atlantic Rim. Yeah, that's it. I'll buy that for him. Yeah. You totally just got taken by that. That's amazing.
I know. Yeah, and it made War of the Worlds, the Canal Plus version, really fascinating because I'm like, oh man, how are they gonna get back to like Edwardian times? Like, are they? Is this like they're cut? Like the aliens are returning now? And then after a while, I was like, wait a minute. I'm gonna go take another look, and I realized there is the war.
That is priceless.
So I watched The War of the Worlds. I think the last episode. There's three episodes. I think the last one might have aired yesterday, but I watched the first two, and it actually does. It does something really fascinating that I'm pretty sure the novel did not do this at all. It takes place in two time frames. One is during the initial sort of invasion, and another is afterwards, like after the aliens have been defeated. But the problem after the aliens have been defeated is that the Earth is like is a wreck. It's, you know, the skies are red, the native, you know, flora has been choked out by red weed. Like the aliens' attempts to terraform have failed, or attempts to invade have failed, but the terraforming has kind of worked. So the problem isn't the aliens; it's trying to figure out how to get the Earth back into shape, and get rid of like natural processes, which are much more difficult than killing some monsters. So it's an interesting take.
Nice.
Unfortunately, it's also kind of deadly slow, and they probably did not need three episodes for all of this, but it is very atmospheric at least, and quite pretty.
Well, that's always worthwhile.
Yeah, and it's British, so you know it's got like, you know, the dozen or so British actors that exist in the world, and they're all in there.
Yeah.
Or at least a few, like Robert Carlyle's in there. Well, he's Scottish, but and Rafe Spall and a few others. What's his face? Rupert Graves or Rupert Everett, one of the two Ruperts. He's in there.
That's been my fun watching, rewatching Lost Girl. I
Oh, the
just, hey, like almost
Canadians.
everyone in Lost Girl showed up on either Killjoys or Wynonna Earp.
Yeah, or Dark Matter or
Or
whatever
Dark
else.
Matter. Or right.
Or
Or all
Defiance.
three.
Yeah. Or all three.
But what
Yeah.
was funny is the number of people who eventually show up in Killjoys or Wynonna Earp as main characters showed up in Lost Girl.
Oh yeah.
Like even just in like tiny little parts.
Yeah. Also fun watching The Expanse and seeing like various Canadian actors like in smaller roles,
Right.
which is really fun. Like you say, oh, that guy was on Killjoys in that one episode. Oh, that guy was there. Oh, that woman was there. Always fun.
Yeah,
And
you can always tell, like, did a show film in like Toronto or Vancouver, basically.
precisely, yeah. And then there's like, it's funny though, we kind of reserve some of those actors, some Canadian actors, for like prestige Canadian productions if they don't show up on American genre television. So we have our own sort of little group that
Right.
you don't get them.
Yeah.
They're just for us.
They're just for you.
So that's, I mean, who cares? But they're just for us.
Not, it's important.
Yeah.
Or something, I don't know. Oh man. Yeah, it's a thing.
Oh, and one more non-media related thing.
Yes.
Christmas has come early to my house.
Okay.
Alana's done this thing where they've gotten me a series of small presents, which will be doled out to me once per day throughout the month of December until the 24th.
Okay.
And today was my first present. It's a pair of bomb ass cool socks.
Nice.
Apparently, there are 12 pairs coming my way.
That's awesome. I do
Yeah.
love me some
So,
good socks.
oh yeah. So every other day, a pair of good socks, and I'm not sure what the sec like what falls on the even days. That's a
Right.
different set of something. I'm hoping it's ink. I don't know. Who knows?
Well, cool. On that note, we can just end a little early, I think.
Sure.
Play some music. Be back next week. Because next week, let me. I mean, next week that we record. We'll be able to talk about Knives Out.
Oh yes, there'll be a lot to
And
talk about.
yeah, no, and then the third season of Ms. Maisel drops on the 6th, so we can talk about whatever we've seen of that.
Oh, absolutely.
And go from there.
Cool. Yes, we will do all those things.
All right. Until then, we'll
Let's
play some
go.
music.
Music.
Woo!